continue the conversation at dannymorell.com/awakenyou. Welcome to this week's episode of The Higher Self, whether it's sexual trauma, dealing with and maybe ending relationships that you know shouldn't be a part of your life, or all things dealing with food. I think you're going to really, really enjoy this episode because the last time we had you on, Jillian, we went so deep. You helped me unlock a part of myself that I didn't know I was dealing with. I can only imagine what we're going to come up with today. So how are you?
I'm so great. Happy to be here. Thank you.
Yeah. So we were just in the living room talking with Jen, and we already started to feel how deep the conversation was going to be, and we came in here. You know, the last time you were here, you shared with us essentially what it is that you do. So tell us again, for those that maybe didn't hear that episode,
yeah. What do you do? I'm a functional dietitian. I practice functional medicine, which is really like root cause medicine. But I've always been fascinated with the intersection of the emotional, psychological trauma that drives our behavior around health and particularly food. That was my journey. And you know, I believe that people that are carrying excess weight, it's not because they simply enjoy food or they, you know, eat because they're bored occasionally. There's deep emotional drivers. There's deep psychological trauma-based drivers. And so I really go for that in my work, to uncover that in people so that they can have freedom and vitality and deep connection with themselves and, yeah, quality of life.
I remember the last time you were here, you said something that I still remember the moment. You literally said, what a prison, like what a prison you're in. And I was like, oh my God, the realization that I was in a prison.
Yeah.
So my first question for you is, and by the way, I'm out of the prison. I eat food. I sleep better now.
Yay.
It's way better. What types of prisons do people subconsciously or unconsciously find themselves in when it comes to food?
Oh my goodness. I think that it can look so many different ways, right? But any lack of freedom, whether it's super restrictive, where there's these, you know, heavily enforced diet culture structures where they're not allowed to eat certain foods, or the opposite end of the spectrum where they feel such a loss of control, it's still a form of prison because they're now a slave to their impulses. Really everything in between. I mean, it's nuanced per the individual, but lack of freedom, lack of the ability to really hone in and what your body is desiring instead of what your mind is hungry for. Mm-hmm. There's that kind of energy is woven deeply in people's relationships with food.
And Jillian, it's so powerful because now, like, I see it all the time. It's, you know, there's almost like this war, this battle going on Instagram in particular and TikTok when it comes to food. Mm. Like, if you're a vegan, like, you're right and meat eaters are wrong. And if you're a meat eater, you're right and vegans are gone. And, you know, as someone who, quite frankly, was a contributor to that battle, because I remember I made a video or two when I was vegan about that, you know, it's just another form of separation.
Exactly.
Right? And if we're honest, I know vegans that are grossly overweight and unhealthy. Same way I know vegans that, you know, are really, really healthy and look wonderful. Mm-hmm. And the same way that I know meat eaters that are grossly overweight and unhealthy. Mm-hmm. And I know some meat eaters that are like, man, they look incredible.
Yeah.
You know? So when it comes to that and what you see out there happening in regards to food, what are your thoughts about that?
I think that divisiveness and confusion is a method of control. I think that so much misinformation out there is exactly what big food, big pharma, big insurance, all the big agra, that's what they want. Because then if there's confusion, they can sway the masses, honestly. And, you know, I've worked with a lot of former vegans who've been severely malnourished and hormonally really compromised. And I've worked with meat eaters that are in a similar space. A lot of it has to do with the quality of the food. I personally am not vegan. I eat animal protein, but it is of really high quality.
Yeah.
And I feel really good.
Yeah.
Of course, if someone comes to me and ethically they have certain preferences, I'll support them as much as I can. But I'm a big fan of quality food, real food, and not to listen to the influencers, but to listen to someone who's deeply versed and educated in physiology and things like that, but also to their body.
Yeah.
But there's a confusing thing about that. You know, this whole movement of intuitive eating, I think it's beautiful. But if you've been disassociated from your body, or you don't necessarily have a strong connection with your intuition, or you've had an emotional relationship with food, it's really hard to feel what your body may be craving in that moment. So I think intuitive eating is a place where we can get to. But I think if you tell somebody who's been dissociated to eat intuitively, they're going to eat emotionally.
Yeah.
Because they don't understand that it's actually the emotions driving the preferences or the choices with food, and not their physical body telling them what they desire.
You know, I went through a moment shortly after, maybe 2 months after our episode, where I returned to eating meat.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the battle of, like, my mind was going crazy, but like, I'm killing the animals and I'm doing something so wrong. And, you know, it's like it was this constant debate. And then, you know, I sat and I thought. And I thought to myself, and I don't know if you've ever had this thought, but I thought to myself, what if none of this was here?
Mm.
What if this was not even 100 years ago, 75 years ago? And none of the stuff that's in my pantry was here.
Mm-hmm.
And none of the stuff that, you know, you could readily find at a grocery store was here. What would I consume?
Mm-hmm.
What would I consume? I would have to go out and somehow find a way to hunt.
Yeah.
And, you know, hopefully in a beautiful way, you know, receive the sacrifice of the animal into my body.
Yeah, with reverence, yeah.
For my family.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to go farm some vegetables. Mm-hmm. I'd have to go make a little chicken coop and that's how I would eat, essentially.
Yeah.
And the more and more that I thought about that, the more and more that I realized how disconnected I am from the reality of the food system.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have a father that taught me how to hunt. I didn't have a father. I just go to the grocery store, and it's so easy for me to be in this debate of what's right and wrong,
mm-hmm.
because I can just go to the store.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's so much ego in it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Absolutely. But if we ever ask ourselves, you know, what if none of this was here? Like, what have human beings been doing for millions of years?
Mm-hmm.
I felt so convicted that I didn't know how to do that.
Yeah.
And I told my kids, I go, boys, I'm going to have to go hunting.
Yes.
I have to.
That's beautiful.
I have to, because I have to. I'm going to cry.
Yeah.
I get emotional thinking about it.
But it's so sacred.
I see the sacredness and the spirituality of it all.
Yes.
And I'm finally awakened to that part of life.
And there's so much in there because, you know, you're taking your dollar vote away from factory farmed animals, which is huge. And you're connecting with the process, with the ritual of hunting. And it's really hard. I tell this to my clients all the time. It's really hard to abuse something that you appreciate.
Mm.
And food, if you are growing it in your own garden and tearing the lettuce and picking the tomatoes from the vines, and there's all this like ritual, respect, reverence, honor, beauty. It's really hard to overconsume.
Yeah.
And so, like, yeah, and you live in Texas, like, go hunt.
Yeah, I'm gonna go.
It's beautiful.
Sure. Yeah, I'm gonna go. I know that for you, this journey with food started because of something really deep that happened to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a really soft spot with this because, you know, you were there at Awaken, where you saw, you know, 85% of the women in the room who had experienced sexual trauma.
It was so powerful.
This was deep. I remember where you were sitting and everything. And for those of you—
crying.
Yeah. For those of you that haven't been to Awaken, what we do is we separate the men and the women, and we walk the women through a certain exercise, you know. Number one, what was that moment like for you to be surrounded with so many other sisters who had experienced what you had experienced, you know, hearing their shares, and then, you know, take us back into your journey of your sexual trauma mm-hmm. in relationship to your food mm-hmm. journey. And then I want to take it from there. After.
Okay. Yeah. In that moment, I was, you know, very deeply connected to my own story, my own pain that I've worked so deeply through, but just the grief of it or the layers of it, it's still there. It's not something that dictates my life, fortunately, anymore, but I can tap into and connect with the rawness of it. Mm-hmm. And so sitting with my own and then hearing the cries of the women around me, oh my God, it was like, I still hear, it was like a universal cry of the feminine. Oh my God, it was so profound. This is something that I think all beings are impacted by, whatever your gender is. Because when the women are violated at this capacity and just the magnitude of it, it affects everything in our world. Mm-hmm. And so it was this universal cry of women, this shared pain, but then this sisterhood, this beautiful sisterhood of like women holding women and supporting. There was a hand on my back of another sister, and it was just like, it was so beautiful. And, you know, while these wounds are excruciating and should never, ideally would never exist, they do. But to find beauty and to alchemize the experience by coming together and sharing the grief and supporting each other through the grief is like turning something so painful into something so beautiful. Mm-hmm. It was profound.
Yeah.
And I think that's the beauty of, like, you know, sharing these kinds of stories in community is like, I didn't know. I mean, I knew, but I didn't. You think you're the only one. You think you're the only one, and maybe you carry shame for what you went through, or you don't want anybody to know, or you feel in some way, you know, faulty or damaged, which is of course not true.
Yeah.
But then to hear your story through the voice of another woman, or to share it and feel the energy in the room, like the women being so impacted by your own share, it's like, it's so universal. It's so, the medicine is the storytelling. It is it's the shared experience and what can come from that. And yeah, it was profound.
And now, Jillian, for a woman out there, maybe she's never been to Awaken. Maybe we get messages like this all the time. Maybe they're somewhere deep in Europe or, you know, deep in, you know, they're in Australia, they're in the Middle East, mm-hmm. and they listen to the podcast and they've experienced sexual trauma, right? And maybe they can't come to Awaken right now, even though they would love to. Like, how did you start that process? What was that like for you to start the healing of it to where if I look at you right now, like you feel like whole, you feel self-actualized. Mm. Like that's a, you know what I'm saying? Like what was that process like for you?
I believe the first thing that came through was like, there's such power in being witnessed in your pain. And it doesn't have to be a whole room of people. It can be a therapist. It can be a trusted friend. I went for probably a year and change without telling anybody but one person. And this person was a teacher of mine and was there in the ceremony that everything really came out. And I learned my story after 30 years of no recollection. And to be witnessed by this person in my grief, in my rage, in my sorrow was such medicine. You know, we carry these things, whether we're conscious of it or not, we carry them in our bodies and we go through it alone. And that's part of the reason why we use food, is to just shove down our stories and our truth and our pain. And it becomes this very isolated journey or experience where we suffer so deeply in that space of loneliness and isolation. And so if this woman or man really has this story, and they're keeping it to themselves because they're ashamed, my invitation is to like, let a trusted person in. Let someone in, have the courage to speak the words. I remember the first time I uttered it out loud, my whole jaw was trembling. Like it was a why I have this like energy is moving in my body right now, but I was shaking and it was so hard for me to form the words because it was a secret I kept for so long. And to speak it and hear myself speak it and the vibration of the sound of my voice speaking it was like this ripple effect. And then to be held in that and then eventually, you know, slowly bringing more people in and realizing that it wasn't actually anything that I did wrong. It didn't have anything to do with me, actually. Some people might not love what I'm about to say, but acts like that are not even personal. It had nothing to do with me. It had everything to do with the person that was doing that to me, acting out their own wounding. I just was the recipient, you know, and it imprinted me greatly. It affected my life tremendously, but it wasn't because of me. So I released the burden of the blame and the fault and the heaviness or the what I decided about myself as a result of that. I was able to release it in the sharing of it, in the, yeah, the airing it out. That's what I would say.
What you just said was so profound, what you had decided about myself.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's a lot of, you know, men and women out there who have been through some form of sexual trauma that have decided things about themselves and about their life.
Trauma, period.
Yeah.
Trauma, period. Trauma, I think it's Dr. Gabor Mate who says this. It's like trauma is like the event, you know, the catastrophic event or the humiliation in class or something like that. But it's also the wake of what happens afterwards. The decisions you make about yourself, the how unheld you were by processing it and integrating those experiences. Like that's also the residuals of trauma that I think really is what grows roots. What you decide about yourself, this like sense of like unworthiness or disgust or whatever the narrative happens to be, it comes from a traumatic event, but the event passes. What sticks is what happens in the nervous system as well as the beliefs that are formed.
So what were your beliefs?
That I was disgusting.
Really?
Yeah. That I was disgusting, that I was that no one would love me, that like no one would want me. It was really like wanting, not being wanted, like I was discarded. That I had to be a certain way to get love, even though the love was so conditional and so contaminated. It wasn't love. It was attention. It was affection. I felt like I was worthy only of the crumbs.
A lot of shame.
So much shame.
Yeah.
So much shame.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the journey from that to where you are now, you know, I remember early on, I would make videos that would say something along the lines of like, you know, there's a gift in everything. Mm-hmm. If you allow yourself to see it. And I could see in your life, the gift is that now you're helping so many freaking people, right?
It's so awesome.
It really is awesome. And Jillian, and if you're out there listening to me, like my hope in what I'm about to say is that you would allow yourself to see even a glimpse of what I'm about to tell you. But regardless of what you've been through, like just on the other side of the fear, just on the other side of the pain, just on the other side of the guilt, just on the other side of the way you see yourself, right? There is hope. And there is the ability to transcend all of that. And in a very beautiful and magical way, it's almost like, you know, like this polarity of life. Like you have the ability to take that trauma that used to be the thing that told you that you are not worthy or beautiful or valuable and completely flip it and make it the absolute thing that allows you to see not only your purpose in life, but allows you to help all of humanity. And I know that's what it was for me.
It's amazing.
And it was for you too.
It was my greatest teacher.
Yeah.
My greatest teacher. Like all of the stones that I've had to flip have been full of lessons and teachings that weren't just for me. I learned the thing. I picked up the stone and received the blessing and the lesson and integrated it into like how I now walk in the world. But it's also universal. It's now like accessible or available for me to share with others that is tangible, practical, applicable wisdom.
Yeah.
It's so cool. It's like we think we're in this silo. We think that our journeys are so unique. And in some ways, the flavor of your wounding is very unique to you, but it's so shared. The wounding is the same. And so if you go through something and can turn, flip those stones and take the lesson from them, you can then spread the freaking blessing, spread the teachings to other people. It's so beautiful.
It's so interesting as you say that, because that's what started all of this for me, is I literally thought, oh my God, if I was this jacked up, like, imagine everybody else.
Yeah.
And like,
I can't be the only one.
Yeah, I have to share this with everybody.
That's exactly how I feel.
Yeah, yeah. I have to share this with everybody. Yeah. Wow. Wow.
It's alchemy.
Yeah.
It's turning shit into gold. It's literally like taking pain and being with that pain, you know? Like, I'm a fan of the dark. I'm a fan of the dark because the dark is where the roots grow. It's like mineral-rich soil for so much growth and beauty. And if you're willing to go in there, into those spaces, in ways that you feel safe and held and supported, then there's such like precious gems of teachings and wisdom and healing available.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you have all this, you've collected all this goodness, it's like natural that you'd want to share it.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's impossible for you to have a successful relationship with another human being or a partner if you don't have a successful relationship with yourself. And what we as human beings don't realize is that we are deeply disconnected. We're disconnected from Mother Earth. We're disconnected from peace. We're disconnected from love. What we do at Awaken is we curate different exercises to help you reconnect first to yourself, and then the beautiful process of reconnecting to everybody begins. And that's why Awaken is so powerful. You'll do more in 3 days at Awaken than you would do 30 years anywhere else.
I was so stuck, and now I feel peace.
Awaken has been the best thing we have done for our marriage.
Coming here, I realized that the answers were inside of me all the time.
Head on over to DannyMorrell.com/awaken now to get your tickets today.
If you're out there and you're listening to me to this right now, there has to be some part of you that is saying like, oh my God, I want some of that. Like I want, you know, essentially we're both saying the same thing. Like we are here because of the trauma,
yeah.
But we were able to find the gift in it all, you know, and transcend it, right? I haven't mentioned this in a while on this show, but I felt called because both of us would not be here today if it wasn't for ayahuasca.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. So for someone that is out there that is sitting and thinking and, I mean, do you agree with the statement? Do you agree? Yeah, you could probably get over the trauma. Yeah, yeah. But I don't know if you can get over it the way that you get over it with ayahuasca. Mm-hmm. I just don't know.
I mean, psychologically, we have so many, this is not my work, this is like internal family systems, we have parts, mm-hmm. right? Many parts. We have a protector, we have a critic, we have a perfectionist, a judge, like we have all these parts, an inner child. And when you're in talk therapy, for example, you're speaking from your conscious mind. So you've got these like protectors that are online that are like, whoa, whoa, like you, not too deep, you know, like the ego's, one of the ego's roles is to protect us from feeling pain.
Right.
But the pain is necessary to be felt if the real deep healing wants to occur. So talk therapy is great, but it's incomplete in my opinion, which is why I do a lot of talking in my work, but I use medicine because those regions of the brain, the default mode network where the ego lives, that goes offline in a psychedelic experience. The activity is drastically reduced. And so different like regions of the brain have an opportunity to communicate. Repressed memories might surface, like in my case, you know, different perspectives on old events might come forth, or, you know, deep levels of compassion, what like somatic experiencing is available in psychedelic experiences. And so those protectors that would otherwise like shield you from going into those real treacherous, like painful places, they're not there. So you have the opportunity to go in and really feel and really heal in a psychedelic experience, which is why I'm such a fan.
Yeah. Yeah. And I am as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And ayahuasca is really interesting, especially as it pertains to food, because in my experience, all genders, if there is an emotional dynamic with food, I believe it's because there's a mother wound. I believe there's a wounding with the mother. And it's not because mothers are bad or we're blaming or shaming the mothers. No, what I know is that nobody can give what they never received. So if your mother was emotionally or physically absent and couldn't provide the warmth and the nurturance and the guidance, protection that you needed as a young child, you have that need that we are trying to satiate with the thing that feels most close to the mother, which is food. It's food, because food is deeply feminine. It comes from the breast of the mother. It comes from Mother Earth. It's feminine. It also feels like we're being hugged from the inside when we eat in a way that's like we're seeking comfort. That's what we're doing. We're trying to self-soothe. We're trying to feel that yummy nurturance. And ayahuasca is feminine, deeply feminine, the medicine of the earth. And so much healing is available with our own femininity, with that medicine. And that translates to how we self-soothe, how we nurture ourselves, how we mother ourselves, all genders included. It's pretty profound.
Yeah, it is. I think I need to do a session with you. I know I said this last time. I know I said this last time, but now I think I...
Let's do it.
You said that and it just...
Yeah. And I don't know much about your story, but your relationship with your mother, like,
yeah.
Does this resonate?
Yeah, it resonates a lot. It resonates a lot because, you know, and again, if you're out there listening, you know, it resonates a lot because I don't know. My mom didn't know how to,
right?
Because her mom wasn't there.
Exactly. Yeah. She couldn't give what she never received.
Right.
Which means you haven't been able to give that to yourself.
Right.
Because you didn't receive it. And this is exactly what I do in my work, is I help people cultivate that sense of nurturance, that sense of safety, so that they can feel and nurture themselves. Because you're really just repeating the same kind of pattern that you received as a child.
Sure.
Impatience maybe, or like super impulsive, like, yeah, like whatever energy your mother carried when she was supposed to be kind of holding you emotionally but didn't have the capacity to, you're mimicking that.
Yeah.
And so you can learn a new way. It's pretty incredible. It's movements of energy.
Yeah, it's moving. Yeah. So speaking of relationship with mother.
Yeah.
I know we were out there in the living room talking about relationships, and Jen and I had shared with you that each of us have someone in our lives that it's time to let go of because they have been an anchor to us. And it's interesting how, you know, for both of us, we feel like we're about to expand like way, way bigger than anything we can imagine. And anything that is weighing us down, you know, in hindsight, maybe that's why you're here. I just said I need to do a session with you. Anything that is weighing us down, like, is being dealt with, is coming to the surface, yep. Right? We started to have conversations around relationship. And I admitted to you, you know, I want to be really gentle with this topic, mm-hmm. because it's my truth, and I can't say this is anybody else's truth, but you know, after my divorce, I held this image of this beautiful, happy family even after divorce.
Yeah.
You're literally sitting in the home that I bought because my ex and my kids used to live literally around this corner.
Wow.
I chased them from California to here and, you know, and yet, what I didn't realize was happening was that that heart and that vision for wanting to hold a loving, caring family together was being taken advantage of.
Mm.
You know, was everything was always my fault. I could never do anything wrong. All bad things that are going on in life are my fault. And I feel like that was used because subconsciously they know, like, my vision is to hold us all together.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And so when we talk about relationships with people, which I think have a lot to do with our relationship with food,
mm-hmm.
you know, what comes up in this scenario? What comes up with the way some people simply project their undealt with traumas or emotions onto us and keep us small, keep us confused, keep us not in our highest self?
As I said out there, and I say in every call with a client, everything is a direct reflection of the relationship we have with the self.
Mm-hmm.
So as you were speaking and you were sharing about this kind of, in some ways, manipulative energy of, like, because there's this...
No, not some ways.
Okay.
Yeah. Straight
very
up,
manipulative.
Hardcore gangster manipulation.
No one shame.
Million professional. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. So that whomever you're speaking of carries that energy, first of all, because it's a projection.
Mm-hmm.
But if, you know, the word that keeps coming to my mind is conditional love. Like, if you have to be this way in order for me to be happy, you have to be this way in order for you to receive love or receive my love. Like, conditional love is so toxic. It's also so pervasive. And it's also what's happening in the person who's spewing out the conditions. If we love ourselves conditionally, if I look a certain way, then I'll be kind to myself. If I perform a certain way, then I'll feel worthy of love. Everything is a direct reflection of the relationship we have with the self. So if you encounter someone who carries that kind of conditional love, A, you know, recognizing it, you have a choice of how much you want to engage or participate or not.
Sure.
But B, the real, like, release for you is compassion for what that person is carrying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I got to a point with people in my life where it's like, I realized that, you know, I don't want to shrink back into the box that you needed me to be in for this relationship to work. I had grown too big. I had taken care and loved myself and known myself too deeply, too preciously to ever put myself into that mold again, into that box. And if you need me to be that way, then you don't even care about me anyway.
Or love me.
It's not even love.
It's not love.
It's manipulation.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's conditional. It's control.
Yeah.
And I just don't want to play. And so I've, you know, relationships that are very, very dear to me with people whom I still love so deeply, I've walked away from because of those reasons. I'm not willing to self-abandon anymore for a relationship or a dynamic to work because that doesn't work for me. And so it doesn't work, period. And I can love them and I can pray for them and I can hold a vision of reconciliation, but not at my own expense.
You know what the crazy thing is? I need to share. It's interesting because as you're saying that, what I realize is a couple of things. Number one, because of the fact that when my parents split up, my dad didn't pursue us.
Mm.
I've been pursuing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's some guilt there.
Yeah.
You know, but also because of that, like, and that's me. I have to accept responsibility for that. That's what's been being used against me the whole time, you know?
Yeah. And what's in there, though, is like, it's like, I don't want to be like him. So I'm going to prove to you how I'm not. But what's underneath there is a belief that you are like him.
Yeah.
And so you're trying to show, look how I'm not like him.
Right.
When really, like, you can reconcile within yourself that you're not like that. You're actually not. And so whether you're able to receive my gestures and my love and whatever else you're offering, whether they can see it or not, it's not on you.
Yeah, that's on you.
It's not on you.
Yeah. Finally, I'm bringing this up because this just happened this week, that finally I just saw it for what it was. Like, there is nothing that I can do at this place and this person's life.
Yeah.
Where I could break in and I can be seen for who I am and be accepted for who I am and be loved for who I am. Yeah. Because I see the pain, and I obviously see the pain that I've caused as well, you know? And I have compassion for it. I have compassion for the inability to accept personal responsibility. I have the compassion for the deep level of anger that has to be carried in someone to react to me in this way. But also, I realized how all of that like was being used and manipulated to keep me in a box.
Yeah.
And I finally just decided, like, I'm done.
Yeah.
Like, I cannot live like this anymore. I can't be the one that keeps calling the family meetings and offers to go to therapists and bends over back. It's fucking tiring.
Yeah.
You know, and I finally had to, like, let go of the vision. And this is how terrifying, and this is how bad it is. And you know, I'm being vulnerable here. I do this at Awaken, so, you know, whatever. But it's so terrifying. It's so deep and it's so dark that when I think, like, there's a part of me that thinks, well, someday we'll all be together, because there's no need for anybody to be fighting and arguing and not hating each other. Like, you know, the deeper you go into the work, the deeper you realize that we're all the same, right?
Yeah.
It's so bad that I think to myself, well, someday, you know, we'll all be back, you know, whatever the case may be. But then I think, well, all that takes is just forgiveness. Mm. It's just personal responsibility. And then I go, yeah, but that will never happen. Like, that's how dark it is, Jillian. You know what I'm saying? It's to the point where it's like, as much as I believe that everybody can heal, I just don't know if everybody wants to.
Or if it's everyone's time to.
Or their karma, their...
Yeah, I can share in the frustration. You know, I hold this vision myself of, like, reconciliation with some of the people that I really love. And I oscillate. It's like, you know, they can do it, and it's, no, they won't. And it's really, you know, painful to want something and desire something for what feels like such a clean reason. I don't have a selfish motive of wanting to reconnect with people that I love. But it's also like what I want, you know, and maybe it's not what they want.
That's it.
And yeah. it can conjure up a lot of emotions such as grief and sorrow to have this vision, hold this vision, and kind of be forced in some way or invited to accept the fact that they may not share your vision. And can I be okay with that?
That's what I finally had to tell myself. It's like, I just finally realized my vision isn't their vision, and that's okay.
Yeah. And, like, I think the where I sit with it and the medicine that I've accessed so far is, like, you know, if everything is a direct reflection of the relationship you have with the self, then what is it about this dynamic? What is this dynamic highlighting it, like, an aspect in me?
I know what it is. Mm. It's my, there was still a part of me that wanted to stay small and, like, entrapped.
Mm.
Because it was my mind's way of justifying that I'm not exactly where I want to be. And it, for me, was the final cord that I needed to cut, like to be able to actually be free. You know, to be able to let go of, like, regardless of what you think of me, regardless of what you say, that's not on me.
Yeah.
That's not on me.
It's not.
Even to the point that even like my kids, like I can't, like, that's their journey to deal with. Like all I can do is love.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, and it's really beautiful, is like the more and more that I do that, the more and more that I things are like getting healed with them.
Yes.
Right. So yeah. So if you've been listening to my podcast for a while, you'll know that I'm a strong believer and advocate for plant medicine and its ability to awaken and heal the mind, body, and soul. It's a belief that is deeply rooted in my own personal experience with both ayahuasca and psilocybin mushrooms. And many of you for years have always asked me, you know, Danny, where do I go? Who can I trust? And there is only one place I would ever recommend or put my name behind, and that is Reunion. Reunion is a place where you could set yourself free from whatever is holding you back from living the life of your dreams. It's a beachfront, beautiful property that is in Costa Rica. And what I love about it is that it's not for profit. And this is the only thing that they focus on is the preservation and the safe utilization of these beautiful, wonderful medicines. And I only feel comfortable putting my name behind it because I am personal friends and have journeyed with some of the members of the facilitating team. Guys, I'm honored to have aligned myself with them to create the Higher Self Scholarship Fund. It's a fund whose purpose is in helping people who don't have the means to experience these medicines and yet have the desire to. And every time one of you books a retreat with Reunion, $100 from every booking is going to go into this fund, and we will be sharing this money with people on a monthly and bi-monthly basis. So help me help others by using the code DANNYREUNION when you go to register to experience your own life transformational journey. To find out more, go to reunionexperience.org and get ready.
Yeah, when we hold on to a relationship or anything really, because we're concerned about how you're being perceived and you don't want to make somebody think this way about you, it's actually like illuminating a belief you hold with yourself. Mm-hmm. If they think this of me, then maybe that will be true. Or, and so it's like everything is a mirror. So if you're afraid of like this person saying this thing, it's like, what about that are you believing? What does it mean for you to have a dissolved family unit? What is prompting you to hold on so tight to the point where you're being manipulated?
Yeah.
Because there sits the belief you hold about yourself. And then you can like love on that part of you that holds that belief.
Yeah, for sure. Man. Powerful shit. Yeah. Food. So how does all of this connect with food? I know how it does for me. And what it feels like to be in that pantry and, you know, just like, you know, deciding you're going to do something or you're not going to do something. And then all of a sudden you do it and you're back at square one and, you know, all of that. And I know this is an issue for people, but like, you know, we've talked about so many deep things so far, sexual trauma. We've talked about relationship. How does all this connect with food?
I think the way you view yourself, the way you talk to yourself, the way you treat yourself, the way you feed yourself, it's all the same. So if there's this seed, this element of you, this facet of you that believes that you're not worthy, you may not consciously feel and walk around with a sense of unworthiness, but the way that you are showing up for yourself in a moment of conflict is like pushing down your emotions, pushing down your truth. There's an unworthiness there, because if there was worthiness, it would be like, okay, I'm going to make time for myself. I'm going to sit down and try to connect with what's happening in my body. I'm going to give myself the space that I needed from a patient and loving caretaker when I was a child who was really concerned with nurturing and finding out what was going on in your world and wanting to be there and provide emotional support for you. Like that is what a person who believes they're worthy of that would give themselves. And so if you're operating with this very impulsive, compulsive, impatient, like fuck it, whatever kind of thing, fuck you? Like, fuck what you're feeling inside, and your feelings don't matter and your truth doesn't matter in that moment. Like, instant gratification matters more, or an instant like security blanket of food to self-soothe in that moment matters more. Like, no, you do. Because all that's coming up when people reach for food in that way is truth. And truth is the most sacred thing ever. There's something in there that you are not willing to feel. There's a need that wants to be met. And when we use food in a way that just diminishes and dilutes and suppresses and numbs, it's this reinforcement that we're not worthy of our own time and attention.
Can I say something right now? If there were ever a case for the medicine, I know you guys feel how thick this energy is right now in this conversation. This is it. Because as much work as I've done, I'm sitting here thinking, like, you would think as a conscious human being, you could find what that is. This is where the medicine comes in right
here. Yeah.
If there was ever a case for the medicine,
yes,
it's this. What you're describing is something so deep, so profound. I've said this before. I don't feel called to sit with the medicine. I have to go figure this shit out.
Yeah.
Because I can't do it. My mind, it's not
cerebral.
Yeah.
It's not language of the mind. We use language to describe it, but it's a deep imprint on the nervous system, in the body, and on the heart. We're seeking love and the feeling of being held in your mother's arms and supported and safe and like gooey. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to regulate our nervous systems. We're trying to get into a space of rest and relax and digest and heal, safety, deep safety. And we reach for the thing that triggers like the superficial chemical reaction of that, but the imprint remains unsoothed. And so we're like, you know, Peter Crone, which I think this is the best definition of addiction I've ever heard. He says addiction is when you can't get enough of the thing that almost works.
Mm.
Food almost works every time. Alcohol almost works every time, but it never fully works. It will never heal your pain. It will never actually make you feel better, except momentarily, but then you go into this whole distracting, self-loathing charade. It never actually soothes the wound. It puts you deeper in isolation, deeper in shame, deeper in separation, in self-loathing. That's the opposite of what you want. What you're craving, what you're literally craving, is deeper connection with self, not disconnection from food, like by food. We use food to disconnect, to sever what's happening in our body. There's really uncomfortable things happening. I feel like I need a donut, whatever. We're trying to sever ourselves from what's happening somatically in our bodies, what's the nervous system is being activated. But what we're really craving is the deep connection. It's so counterintuitive. It's so counterintuitive to the point where I have written this on a piece of paper and taped it to my pantry, in my pantry at one point in my journey, that I said, what did I say? What I'm deeply craving, what I'm actually craving is deep connection with the self. And I put craving like huge because I'll go to the pantry for a craving.
Mm-hmm.
But the food is dissociating me from my body. It's dissociating me from my truth. from my emotion, my emotional experience, what really needs to be held? Why would I grab food if what I'm actually wanting is the opposite of what food will give me?
Everybody, go to reunion and go sit with the medicine. I'm telling you this right now. Seriously.
Bring the intention of like, it's all about creating safety within yourself to feel.
Yeah.
Because when you were a little boy and you needed your mom and your mom wasn't available to you, whether physically or emotionally unavailable, that need remains. And so you had all these big feelings, but they weren't held in a safe way. So you learned to push them down. They were invalidated. You learned to distract yourself from them in various ways, right? Feeling wasn't safe. That's the freaking problem. That's the problem. We're all afraid to feel. We're terrified of feeling. Feeling is fucking scary, especially when the imprint, the memory of feeling big things when we were younger wasn't safe. And so now it's like, okay, I'm an adult. I'm a powerful adult. I'm resourced. I'm not a four-year-old little girl anymore or a four-year-old little boy. I know intellectually I can feel pain and sorrow and all the things, but I think of the nervous system as the inner child. Whenever we're terrified of feeling something scary or going into an ayahuasca experience, like terrified, it's the system remembering how scary it once was. It's the contraction of the nervous system based on old imprints when we were a child. So if you can begin as the adult to create safety for yourself in a moment where you're wanting to reach for something in the pantry and come with gentle energy and compassion, because all you're really doing is trying to self-soothe. If you can create safety within yourself to begin feeling, so not going into like self-judgment or ridicule or criticism, but gentleness and softness. Okay, what's going on here? What am I really wanting? As if you were talking to a four-year-old. I talk to my four-year-old self all the time. We're homies. I love her. She holds the keys to all. She's got all the keys. So it's like speaking to her in those moments gently and creating safety for her. All of a sudden, what becomes available is the feelings that you've habitually tried to suppress. And then all of a sudden you can feel the frustration with the dynamic you were describing earlier. The rage, maybe the fucking rage of like, I want this thing and it's not happening and they think of me this way, and giving yourself the opportunity to feel those feelings instead of using food to push them down as you learned when you were a little boy. That is the antidote.
Yeah.
It's literally the antidote of obesity and illnesses that stem from obesity. We're all carrying around pain, and the pain is, we're afraid of feeling it. So we just keep pushing it down and accumulating more pain. And the way out is to feel what you've been stuffing. And the only way you can feel is if you are safe for yourself. You become safe for yourself. And again, you can't give what you didn't receive, but you didn't learn how to create safety for yourself because that wasn't necessarily modeled, but you can learn that. And especially with medicine, you can learn it fast.
Yeah.
And it's life-changing.
Yeah, it is. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I told you guys this was going to be deep. It's just amazing to me. It's just amazing to me how much pain and how afraid we all really are.
It's devastating.
It's a lot. It's a lot. And I, you know, sometimes when I'm up there and I look down at all the people, you know, after breath work, and they're crying and wailing, and they're letting go of everything. And as you're sitting here talking to me right now, it just makes me think of, like, there's billions of people out there. It's a lot.
Deep pain.
Yeah, deep pain. Yeah.
But like we talked about in the beginning of this conversation, it's like pain is an incredible teacher. Mm-hmm. And if you're willing to feel, it has something for you. It has a gift. We're carrying like a sack of it around, like a big Santa Claus sack in the form of weight or illness or whatever, conditions, addictions. We're lugging it around anyway, trying not to feel the thing that we're swimming in.
Yeah.
And so if you can get the courage to begin to feel, you offload some of the pain. There's spaciousness now, more room for joy, more room for connection with yourself and with others. It's like, it's just ironic that we're all trying so desperately to avoid the pain, but the pain is the thing that frees us. It's the thing that sets us free. It's the reason why we're here. It has given me my life back. It has given me my life back because I was willing to feel the pain I was terrified of feeling. That is available. I'm no different than anybody else carrying pain. I have courage, maybe. Some people, I believe that we all do. We can tap into it. We can nurture it. But I was willing to feel, and I freed myself.
And it's available to everybody.
Everybody.
Yeah. You know, I'm excited because we've brought you on as one of the guides in our new Awaken You app. And you're going to be focused on health. Mm-hmm. But I think there's some intertwining of spirituality and relationships as well. So for those of you that are out there listening, Jillian is going to be joining. I think we've announced Seema and Abby Ray Wilson, myself, and a couple of others as your guides in the Awaken You app. So
I can't wait. Excited.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear your classes, what you're going to be teaching and offering. So if you want to participate in that, just download the Awaken You app on your iPhone. And I think we're going to have a lot of growth, I envision that app being like medicine to the world.
Yeah. You know,
for sure.
Deeply.
Yeah. How do people find out more about you?
On Instagram, JillianAcosta_RD. And my site is therootcausemethod.com. Of course, on Awaken You.
Yeah.
I'll be there. Can't wait.
Yeah, for sure.
March 6th is my first class.
Oh, is that when you were teaching a class? Yep. Oh, that's sweet. I love that. What are you going to be teaching on?
The first one is called It's Never Been About the Food.
See, what a great title for a book, by the way.
Mm. It's Never Been About the Food.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you guys. And, you know, truthfully, whether it's the app, whether you want to go sit with the medicine in Costa Rica, maybe this is the year. You know, I'm looking out the window right now and the sun is starting to shine. The weather is getting beautiful. Maybe you take a trip to Costa Rica, go to reunionexperience.org, or whether you come into Awaken in London, Miami, or Palm Springs, join us. Come and feel the pain. And come and release it. Mm-hmm. Oh, to get the Awaken You app, go to dannymorell.com/awakenyou. And now we'll see you next week for another episode of The Higher Self. Thanks for watching this week's episode of The Higher Self. If you want to continue your journey of awakening your absolute highest self, I invite you to join our community by downloading the brand new Awaken You app right now. Simply go to dannymorell.com/awaken and the letter U to download the app, and I will see you inside our community.